questions. There's the story of the proverbial dumb blonde and a very pushy US lawyer who are a long transatlantic flight. They're sitting next to each other, and the smart lawyer says to the lady, "Would you like to play a fun game?" The blonde, who's tired, just wants to have a quiet kip and politely declines. The lawyer persists. He explains the game's easy. It's a lot of fun. "It works like this," he says. "I ask you a question, and if you don't know the answer, you pay me $5. Then you ask me a question, and if I don't know the answer, I pay you $5. The dumb blonde declines, turns over, tries to get some sleep. The lawyer gets a bit cross. He's pushy. "All right," he says, "all right, let's give this game a bit of spice. If you don't know the answer, you pay me $5. If I don't know the answer, I'll pay you $500. Well, that catches the blonde's attention. And she says, "Okay," knowing that there'll be no end if she doesn't agree. So the lawyer asks the first question. "What's the distance from the Earth to the Moon?" The blonde pauses for a moment, reaches into her wallet, and produces a $5 note. Hand it to the lawyer. "Okay," says the lawyer, "now it's your turn." Right, she says, "What goes up a hill with three legs and comes down with four legs?" The lawyer looks puzzled. He stops, he thinks, he scratches his head, and the blonde turns away and goes to sleep. He gets out his computer, he goes to Google, he gets out his phone, he rings his mates on the airphone. 5.5 hours later, he still has not got the answer. He wakes the blonde, and he gives her $500. "Thank you," she says, and turns away to get some more sleep. The lawyer is frustrated. Taps on the shoulder. "But what's the answer?" And she reaches into her pocket and gives him a $5 note. So who's done? Questions and answers. The question for today is simply, who is this man? It was a question that Jesus' disciples had asked a couple of chapters back when Jesus calmed the storm. Who is this man? Who is this man was the same question that Herod asked when he heard what Jesus was doing. And some people were saying he was Elijah come back to life, or John the Baptist come back to life, or a prophet from God. And Peter then made that extraordinary confession, you recall. "You are the Christ of God, the anointed one of God, the one specially sent by God." And in Matthew's gospel, he adds the word, "You are the Son of the living God." And so Peter was saying that Jesus was someone who was more special than either Elijah or John the Baptist. And the Son of God, of course, was a term which was applied above all to God's chosen king for the nation, the anointed one, the appointed one, the Messiah, God's chosen. And so Peter got it right, didn't he? At least up to a point. Because what he didn't get, you recall, is the message that Jesus went on to give. Yes, he was God's chosen king, but he was a king who was sent to die for his people. He told them, "I'm going to be rejected by the leaders, I'm going to die, and then rise again." But they didn't get it. They didn't see how that could possibly fit in with what they thought God's chosen king should do. And if you just go back a few verses before the passage we had read to us, Jesus says this, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will save it." That was a message that was hard to hear. hard to understand, as it is today, because it talks of the way of the cross, of difficulty, of suffering. We're not promised personal triumph. We're not promised glory. We're not promised promotion at work. We're not promised that we'll be well thought of and respected in society, nor have good health and well-being. Not popularity, not freedom from pain, not freedom from disappointment or frustration or sorrow. Not even a strong church, not even flourishing church activities or faithful Christian friends. Not even family and friends who we pray for becoming Christians. It's not glory, glory, glory all the way, as the Spurs fans used to sing many years ago. Jesus as King means something different. And that's the background to the story, the narrative that we have read to us. It's a remarkable narrative, isn't it? Here's Jesus on a mountain praying. And his three closest friends are with him, Peter, James and John, and are unable to focus on praying. And they doze off. And in doing so, they miss out on hearing a conversation which is just coming to an end as they wake up to what's going on round about them. And I wonder, it struck me, how much do we miss out because we fail to pray? And we tend to doze off, either literally or metaphorically. If you're like me, you perhaps pray in bed. And it is not unknown to doze off, literally, is it not? And I'm ashamed, really, of how little I pray. And we know that Jesus' disciples had that same issue, both here and in the Garden of Gethsemane later. They were unable to watch and pray with Jesus. And so I've got some questions for today. We start with that one, who is this man? But I want us, as we think about this narrative, to think, what do his disciples miss? What do they see? And what do they hear? Those will probably come up in a moment or two. But what do they miss, first of all? Well, they miss out on most of the conversation, which could be entitled, "What is Jesus going to do?" Another question. Because Jesus, it says, and they were talking about his departure, which he was about to bring to fulfillment at Jerusalem, verse 31. It's a conversation about, and the word is, an exodus, a departure. Same word, exodus, which Jesus is going to fulfill in Jerusalem. And there are three incidents in Jesus' life in Luke's Gospel where the Father's guidance becomes visible as a supernatural event, and you'll remember them. His baptism, where again there's a voice from heaven. There's this incident, and then in Gethsemane, when he's praying about what's going to happen, and an angel comes and ministers to him. It's all about what Jesus is going to do. And it's something he sets out determinedly to do, which is why we had verse 51 read to us. He resolutely set out for Jerusalem. That's where he has to go for his departure, his exodus, to be fulfilled. Well, what is the exodus? It's the departure on a journey, isn't it? Just like Moses and the Hebrews from Egypt to Canaan, in Jesus' case, it's to Jerusalem, to the cross, to the grave, to resurrection, to ascension. And he has in mind also, as we'll see, I think, his return. The fulfillment of God's whole plan for his people, in the same way as the Exodus was part of God's plan for the nation of Israel. And the discussion of this Exodus takes place with, guess who? Moses, who led the first Exodus. And Elijah, who we've heard early on, was described in Malachi as the messenger or prophet to come, before the day of the Lord, where God himself would come to do justice. And what they're talking about is God's great plan that involves Jesus. And it would have helped the disciples to have been awake for that, wouldn't it? To have had some greater understanding of what was going to happen. And as it is, we know they failed to grasp it until much later. So what did they miss? What is the Exodus? And now, what do the disciples see? Well, we know what they saw. They saw two men who they understood to be Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. And they see something else too, don't they? They see Jesus' face changed because he's been praying. Just like Moses, when he was on the mountain, his face shone, was radiant. In the Gospel here, it's his face becomes other. That's what it says. It's different because he has been in communication with his Father. But more than that, it's changed, and even his clothes share the brilliance of this encounter with his Father, which anticipates the glory that will be his following what he says is going to happen to him, death and resurrection. And the other two, Moses and Elijah, are described as appearing in glorious splendor or glory. So it seems that after their death, in the presence of God, they share the same characteristics to some extent. And it is truly glorious to be in the presence of God. So here are two key figures in the Old Testament, and they endorse what it is that Jesus has got to do. And what he does is a fulfillment of their own roles. They are there because Jesus is the completion of what they had begun, of what they were involved in, God's plan for his people. What do the disciples hear? The next question. Well, as we've already seen, they get the tag end of the conversation as they wake up, as Moses and Elijah are talking to Jesus about his future. And Jesus has explained to his disciples already what's going to happen, but they haven't got the message. And Jesus is now talking with Moses and Elijah about it, who represent not just the law and the prophets, the Old Testament, but more specifically the deliverance that God has brought and will bring to his people from the evil which is part of their daily life and surroundings. God is in the process of sorting it out, and he will bring it to completion when the day of the Lord comes, as we heard in Malachi, when God himself comes. And at the very moment where Moses and Elijah are about to leave, Peter makes a suggestion. He's a bit confused. Unsurprisingly, I guess, this is not an everyday experience, is it? And he wants to build three shelters. Perhaps like the shelters or booths or tabernacles that the Jews would build on the top of their houses and live in for a week at a time, as an Orthodox Jew still does. The Feast of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles. And perhaps, and here's something for you to look up when you get home, perhaps Peter sees the final fulfillment of the Feast of Tabernacles, which you'll read about in Zechariah 14, verses 16 to 20, where Zechariah speaks of all the nations coming up to Jerusalem for this feast, the Feast of Tabernacles, to celebrate it and worship the King, the Lord Almighty. And if that's what Peter is thinking, and I think it probably is, it's all of the feast with his understanding that Jesus is about to bring everything to completion. Glory is about to happen. God is going to be present with his people and everything is going to be fine and right, just as it ought to be. And what he hasn't grasped is that the cross has to come first, before any question of glory. And you know, often we don't grasp that either, do we? We somehow expect everything to be fine here and now. But God will just sort out all our problems. So everything will be okay. God will make sure it happens for us. And we don't see that the way of the cross is what we're called to. And glory is the later. And when he makes that suggestion, God responds. He responds because a cloud then envelops them. And the cloud is always a picture of God being present, just as it was on Mount Sinai with Moses. There are echoes throughout this of Moses on Mount Sinai, aren't there? God is there. And if Peter is equating Jesus with Moses and Elijah and thinking they're all on pretty much the same level, then God is about to put him right. Because God is specially and differently present with Jesus. And so they hear. They hear the voice of God the Father speaking about Jesus as his son. And you'll remember, it's very similar, isn't it, to the voice that came at Jesus' baptism. Recounted by Luke in chapter 3, where the voice at the baptism speaks to Jesus himself and says, "You are my son, whom I love. With you I'm well pleased." And here, the voice speaks not to Jesus, but to the three disciples. "This is my son, whom I've chosen. Listen to him." And so the reference to the Son, the chosen one, picks up what Peter has said as to who Jesus is. It echoes Isaiah 42. "This is my chosen servant." Described in the other servant songs in Isaiah. In Isaiah 49 as the one who judges, and Isaiah 52 and 53 as the one who suffers as the servant of God. But what you get is a clear and express instruction. Listen to him. And they need that because they've misheard or misunderstood or blocked out what he's told them about his death and what he had to do as part of the Exodus. And it's a repeat, you know. It's a repeat of something that was said back in Deuteronomy chapter 18 that we had read to us. Page 197, if you want to follow it. Because Moses was told that there would be another prophet who would come like him. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 15 onwards. "The Lord your God will raise up a prophet like me from among your brothers. You must listen to him." Exactly the same words. And verse 18 and 19 say, "If anyone doesn't listen to my word, the prophet speaks in my name, I myself will call him to account." In addition to Moses and Elijah endorsing Jesus, God endorses his son, his chosen one. A prophet like Moses, but beyond that, one to whom they must listen above all else. And if they don't listen, they'll be called to account. Well, there's the story. What do the three disciples get out of this? And what do we get out of this? These are the questions we need to ask. Well, when Moses and Elijah disappear, the disciples are left alone with Jesus. And they don't know what to say. They don't know what to think. What's really happened? And that may be true for us. We think, well, what are we really to make of this? Because they'd experienced something of God, which they couldn't articulate clearly until much later after the resurrection. Maybe you've had spiritual experience, but they're hard to speak of. Here they're left in awe, they're left in fear, not knowing what to make of it. They know that Jesus is someone greater than Moses, Elijah or John the Baptist or any other prophet, someone to whom God relates as a father to a son, someone who's specially chosen, and death and resurrection are involved in this in some way. More than that, it's difficult for them to see. Jesus they've seen in anticipation of where he will be in glory. But the one message they will have got clearly above everything else was, listen to him. And we, of course, stand in rather best position, don't we? Because we can see the whole story that they couldn't at that stage. We know what Jesus meant when he said he had to die and rise from death and to go away and to come back. But whether we understand clearly or not, the message we get to all of us is very simple. Listen to him. Listen to Jesus. If you don't understand things, listen to what Jesus says. If you don't understand what's happening to you in your life at present, just listen to Jesus. There are many things that happen to us in life that we don't understand. We don't know why these things occur. And we're told quite simply, listen to Jesus and trust him. In the passage immediately before this, in the conversation with Peter, Jesus himself asks a question. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very self? And he goes on, if anyone's ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his glory and in the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. And so I think if you don't understand what this passage really means, if you don't understand the purposes of God in your own life, then this incident challenges us to ask three questions of ourselves. And the first is simply this: are we praying, or are we falling asleep, literally or metaphorically, like the disciples? Secondly, are we listening to Jesus, taking time to do that? And thirdly, and this applies to all of us, are we ashamed of Jesus, or do we live as if we were ashamed of him? And so the words of Jesus come across to us. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and lose his very self? If anyone's ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his glory and the glory of the Father and the holy angels.